Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Give us a call. The number is 208-991-4783. And become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Today's episode is brought to you by the support of our listeners. Thank you so much for all of your support. And now it is time to get into today's episode of Sherlock Holmes. This one's called The Logic of Murder.
From New York City, the makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and more than 1,200 leading retail stores from coast to coast, presenter Arthur Conan Doyle's immortal character, the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes, starring John Stanley. This week's adventure, The Logic of Murder.
You're going to die within the next few seconds.
No!
But before you die, you will have the privilege of seeing a technique in murder never before used in the history of man. I shall start now. This will be the perfect murder, and the simplicity of it will astound you. Look, all I have to do is this.
True expenses can't afford it. Now, if you didn't know otherwise, that's what you might think when you see the new fall suits by Clippercraft. To be sure, Clippercraft's rich-looking fabrics have a well-deserved reputation for long wear, and you can see for yourself how superbly Clippercraft suits are tailored, how perfectly they fit. Expensive-looking, yes, but you'll pay only $40 or $45. That's what happens when more than 1,200 of this country's finest independent stores concentrate their purchasing power. That brings about production and distribution savings that are passed along to you. That's why you can enjoy the extra long wear of Clippercraft handsome worsted suits at only $45 at the friendly independent store in your community that sells Clippercraft. See the selection of top coats and overcoats, too. You just can't find values to beat Clippercraft. Compare Clippercraft with clothes selling for many dollars more. Well, Dr. Watson, I'm curious to know what you mean by the logic of murder.
Mr. Harris, this adventure began one autumn evening in 1896, when Holmes and I were in our flat at 221 B. Baker Street. We'd had an unexpected visitor. He was a lean, pale chap, abnormally tall, with penetrating eyes. As he explained his grotesque mission, my amazement grew each moment.
My name is Forrest, Mr. Holmes. Dr. Nelson Forrest.
Most distinguished name, sir. One with which I'm quite familiar. May I present my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson?
How do you do, Dr. Forrest?
Dr. Watson.
Don't you occupy a chair of medicine at Oxford, sir?
Indeed I do, but my civic duties prevent my being very active at the university. I'm also chief toxicologist at the coroner's office, Boars Hill, adjacent to Oxford.
And the purpose of your visit, Dr. Forrest?
I've performed the duties of a coroner for decades, Mr. Holmes. I've performed more than 6,000 autopsies. I'm something of an expert on causes of death.
Intriguing background. Pray continue.
I've two associates, Chief Justice Wickham.
Yes, I know him well, Professor of Jurisprudence.
And Professor Edward Roberts.
Ah, yes, one of the world's foremost experts on logic.
We were enjoying a pleasant afternoon tea some weeks ago, the three of us. The conversation turned to the ancient problem of the perfect murder.
I've spent many a long evening ruminating over that problem.
The conversation became most spirited. Each of us made contributions. Wickham, a veritable genius on evasions of the law, made a few superb suggestions. I contributed, too, on the basis of my knowledge of causes of death.
And Roberts?
Roberts, our master of logic, fitted each step of the perfect murder into its proper place with breathtaking precision.
You mean to say, Dr. Forrest, that your trio has created the perfect murder?
Astonished.
No, gentlemen, not quite. Our objective was to construct a murder so ideally committed that it was absolutely impossible to know how the victim had died and impossible to identify the killer.
Good Lord, if anyone knew how to commit such a crime, why...
I think someone does, Dr. Watson.
Really?
We solved every problem for the would-be killer, except one. The final step called for a staggering feat of logic. It was a puzzle fit for our greatest minds. Well, our tea ended. Wickham and I forgot the problem. We felt it could never be solved.
And Professor Roberts, the logician?
Precisely why I've come to you, Mr. Holmes. I've known Roberts intimately for years. He has an insatiate passion for such things. He spends every minute of his spare time playing highly advanced forms of chess. Shogi, the Japanese version. Cylindrical chess. Three-dimensional chess. He has solved retrograde problems in chess that have been riddled since the 6th century Persians.
You mean, Doctor, you believe Roberts may have solved the last step of this perfect crime?
I do. It's a horrible accusation. Once knowing that last step, Roberts might commit murders endlessly without ever fearing that he'd be caught.
Why are you so certain that Roberts has solved it?
Mr. Holmes, that man could not sleep, could not eat, could not keep his sanity if he did not solve such a problem.
Yes, but even if he can commit the perfect murder, why should he attempt it?
The temptation is too powerful to resist, Dr. Watson. You're a man of science, sir. Surely you appreciate the ruthless driving force of the scientific mind? Professor Roberts would have to know if the murder were really perfect. He'd have to try it.
And what do you expect of me, Dr. Forrest?
I am a physician, sir, not a criminologist. I believe the menace is great. I've hoped you might see Professor Roberts. You might try to learn if he can commit the ideal murder.
Have you asked him yourself if he solved the puzzle?
Yes. He denies having thought of it since that tea. But his whole being is dedicated with a religious fervor to visiting weird, unexplored areas where the human brain has never ventured. He could not resist embarking upon so magnificent an odyssey of the mind.
I see. I accept the invitation, Dr. Forrest. Watson and I shall see your professor.
It's simple to find him. He lives with his young niece, Edith, at a cottage in Boers Hill.
Come, Watson. We shall attempt to learn if Professor Roberts has become the one human being on Earth who knows the technique for an absolutely perfect murder.
I'm delighted to have so renowned a guest, Mr. Holmes. Welcome.
Thank you, Professor Roberts. I trust we're not imposing.
No. Quite the contrary. I've plenty of time. Matter of fact, I was just leaving for a few days' vacation with my niece. I've all sorts of spare time these days. Are you comfortable there, Dr. Watson?
Very, Professor, very.
For a gentleman with so many demands upon his services, surely this is a visit of vital importance.
It is, Professor.
I'm at your service, sir.
Professor, you entered into a discussion with two faculty associates of yours some weeks ago, Dr. Forrest and Justice Wickham.
But I see them so frequently. To which discussion do you refer?
It was a delightful afternoon tea, and the subject was murder, Professor. The flawless murder.
Oh, yes, I recall it. Evidently, it made a lasting impression upon them. Who spoke to you about it?
Dr. Forrest. Professor, one step in logic remained. One problem was unsolved. To arrive at the ultimate ideal technique for committing the murder. Is that correct?
It is.
Did you give the problem further thought?
No. None whatsoever. The problem was impossible.
Even for one of your gifts?
Mr. Holmes, surely you must know that the perfect murder is an illusion. It defies the infinitely petty scope of the human mind.
Uncle Edward, the luggage is ready. It's by the door. Oh, I beg your pardon.
Oh, this is my niece, Edith Marshall. Edith, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, Dr. John Watson.
How do you do, Dr.
Edith's been preparing us for our little vacation. Is everything ready, my dear?
Yes, Uncle Edward. I haven't the time to clean the house, though. I dislike leaving it so dusty. There's dust all about. On the bookshelves, on your chest set, on the mantel.
Oh, let it be, child. We shan't care. Mr. Holmes, was it solely because of that discussion you mentioned that you came here?
Solely.
I certainly do hope you won't take offense, but it strikes me as rather a fool's errand.
Does it?
Dr. Forrest is sometimes more of a nervous old woman than a professor of toxicology.
I always choose to follow the scent of murder, Professor, however faint and elusive.
What's wrong, Uncle Edward?
Nothing, nothing at all, Edith. Mr. Holmes and I were just chatting. That absurd problem of the perfect murder.
If they're off on a vacation, Holmes, perhaps we'd better...
Oh, we don't want to rush you.
Oh, it's quite all right.
Of course, this isn't entirely a vacation for Uncle Edward.
Well, why not?
Because you must read the minutes of the Board of Trustees meeting last week. You should have gone. I'm taking them along.
Oh, that tires me.
We'd best dash along, Holmes.
I regret that your mission was not more fruitful, Mr. Holmes.
It's been enlightening, Professor Roberts. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon,
Miss Marshall.
Goodbye, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson. Uncle Edward.
Yes, my dear.
Please don't be upset, but...
So what is it?
You did tell Mr. Holmes the truth, didn't you?
The truth?
About not having worked out a way to commit a perfect murder.
Of course I told the truth.
I wish you'd never discussed it with Wickham and Forrest.
Why?
Well, ever since you did, I've had an awful feeling about it.
Really?
The kind of shadows falling over the cottage. I was never afraid to stay here before. But last night, I couldn't sleep. I kept wondering if you'd solve the problem. I kept wondering what you might do.
Oh, dismiss it from your mind, Edith. Even if by some odd chance I should find the answer, what of it?
I don't know. I saw you in the garden yesterday, at twilight. It was very cold outside, but you were standing there without a coat or hat, and there was perspiration on your face.
Just your imagination.
No, I saw you quite clearly. I couldn't help but think...
Yes?
Never mind. I'm being foolish.
You've been working hard, Edith, your tense. And we're both a bit bored. The atmosphere's oppressive. As soon as we reach the Cotswolds, those beautiful hills, you'll relax.
I hope so. I have been overwrought, all because of that stupid conversation and that gruesome problem. Shall we fetch our things and leave?
By all means.
Well, Holmes, for once I do believe you've taken us upon a futile journey. Not that I mind this carriage ride and the train back to London. I rather... Holmes, are you paying the slightest bit of attention?
No, my dear Watson.
You're not convinced by Professor Roberts' protests of innocence, are you?
One mixes the various elements in the retort, Watson. One lights the flame and soon the brew begins to bubble. There were elements of our few moments with the professor of logic that should soon produce a fascinating compound.
I didn't notice anything peculiar.
Didn't you? The professor of logic was most illogical.
Was he?
Given a moment for further contemplation, I shall have crystallized my thoughts. But I must think fast. If the professor knows how to commit the perfect murder, he may be tempted to try it at any moment. Aha.
You have it, Holmes?
Turn back, driver. Back to Boar's Hill, to the professor's house where you found it. Quickly, quickly!
Do you believe the professor solved it, Holmes?
I'm sure of it.
How'd you know?
He remarked that he had a great deal of spare time.
Yes, yes,
Previously, Dr. Forrest informed us that Professor Roberts has a fanatic interest in advanced forms of chess.
Yes, so
yet,
he did.
Yet, with all this spare time, Edith, his niece, observed that his chess set was covered with dust. It had gone unused for a considerable period. Why, Watson? Why would an incurable addict of chess abandon it completely when he has ample time? Then consider the minutes of the trustees' meeting.
The minutes?
Yes. Edith reprimanded the professor for failing to appear at the meeting so that he's now obliged to read the minutes. Although he has so much time, the professor neglected a vital appointment. Why, Watson? Only one answer is conceivable. He's been so consumed by the desire to solve the riddle of the ideal murder.
Yes, you're right, Holmes. We must confront him with your conclusion. Yes, but while you've the evidence that he's been struggling with the riddle, how do you know that he's found the answer?
Think, Watson. If he were innocent, if he were considering the problem merely as an exercise in mental gymnastics, he would have admitted to working on it, would he not?
Quite.
However, he lied. He pretended to have ignored that afternoon tea once it had ended. He could only have attempted that camouflage if he had an insidious motive. I should say he knows how to commit the perfect murder, and he intends to try.
Good Lord.
I should say he would choose for his victim a trusting individual who's quite handy. In short, his lovely young niece, Edith. Driver, can't your horses do better? Hurry, man! Hurry, hurry!
this is the time for a new topcoat or overcoat. Naturally, you'd like a really expensive-looking coat, and with the cost of living so high, its price should be kind on your pocketbook. So your Clippercraft dealer gives you rich-looking fabrics that are hard to wear out and superbly tailored topcoats and overcoats with made-for-you fit. Yet the most luxurious of all Clippercraft coats will cost you only $47.50, but you can own a distinctive Clippercraft coat for as little as $40. The huge concentrated buying power of more than 1,200 of America's finest independent stores makes these sensational values possible. No wonder America is so proud of Clippercraft values. Ask to see the new lightweight Clippercraft zipper topcoat that has taken the country by storm. On chilly days, just zip in the lining and brave the wind in warm comfort. Ideally light in weight and wonderfully light on your budget. That's why men who know insist on Clippercraft clothes. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
These leading stores in the metropolitan area are proud to add their names to Clippercraft in your suits, topcoats, and overcoats. In Manhattan, Saks 34th, Broadway at 34th. John Wanamaker Men's Stores, Broadway at 8th and 67 Liberty Street. In Brooklyn, Abraham and Strauss. In Newark, New Jersey, Boulevard Men's Shop, Kresge, Newark. And in Jamaica, the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue.
Dr. Watson, we're most impatient to return to your story.
Well, Mr. Harris, with the shocking realization that Professor Roberts knew how to commit a perfect murder and was probably about to try it upon his young niece, Holmes and I raced in our carriage back to the professor's cottage at Boar's Hill.
It's odd, Holmes. The professor answered so quickly when we first called on him.
Knock once more, Watson.
You know, he may have done away with Edith after we left. Now he's vanished.
If he has, it'll be the first act of murder I shall never be able to prove, Watson. Merely indicting him on the basis of chatter at a tea party will be of no avail. We shall not be able to establish the cause of death, the motive, nor anything else.
He refuses to answer.
Well, this door's flimsy. I believe we have enough strength to force it.
Right you are, Holmes. Ready?
Ready.
Once more, Holmes. There we are.
Professor Roberts. Professor Roberts. Search the other rooms, Watson.
Yes, sir. No one in the bedroom.
Not in this kitchen.
That is empty, too.
They've gone, Watson. The professor of logic has made off with his niece to use her as his victim.
Could we possibly find them, Holmes? They said they were going on a vacation.
Yes, but where, Watson? Where? We must look at every corner of this cottage for a clue.
About ransacked the whole place, Holmes?
Yes, and no indication of where he's taken the girl. There must be one. A human being cannot quit his quarters for a prolonged period without leaving traces.
You see, they might have gone to Bournemouth for fishing. Or to Wales. Wales for the mountain air. They might have taken the waters in Malvern. Perhaps they just dashed over to the Cotswolds. You know, there are many small hotels.
There are many possibilities, but we've no time at all, and we must know exactly where.
I've gone through the closets, through his books, his desk, the niece's bureau.
We haven't emptied the waste paper basket, Watson.
Capital notion, Holmes. I'll do it. Here. Notes, cancel check, and advertisements.
Ah, that envelope.
Just the corner of an envelope. The rest has been hopelessly torn away. Just the last portion of where the return address was printed.
May I see it? E-R-S-E-T-S-H-I-R-E.
Ursature? What word ends in Ursature? You know, Holmes, this letter might have been written to the professor for any purpose whatsoever.
Yes, Watson, but if it should happen to have come from a well-established resort, we might reasonably assume it was correspondence involving a reservation for the professor and his niece.
Well, one of the vacation spots I can think of ends in Ursature. There's Malvern, there's Bournemouth, there's Isle of Wight.
The word that ends that way is Somersetshire. The Cotswolds, the nearest and most popular holiday resort in this area. We'll do just as well by carriage as if we stop to wait for the train.
Certainly, sir.
Fetch a cab. Run, Watson, run!
Countryside here in the Cotswolds is exquisite, isn't it, Uncle Edward?
Yes, Edith. It's enchanting.
You don't seem to be enjoying it.
Oh, but I am, my dear, I am.
You seem distracted.
Do I?
You haven't been thinking of that awful problem, have you?
Perhaps.
Uncle Edward.
A great weakness, Edith. The problem I can't solve becomes an obsession. You should know that. I become tantalus, thirsting in hell up to my chin in a pool of water which recedes when I attempt to drink.
You must use your willpower. You must forget it.
It's too late.
What do you mean?
I did lie to Holmes.
You what?
I lied. I have been thinking about how to commit the perfect murder ever since that strange afternoon. It seems almost unreal now. Almost as if part of it were a dream. I have been thinking of it since I sat there in the sun with the two professors of tea, idly chattering, never realizing what seeds were being planted in my mind.
Did you solve the puzzle, Uncle Edward? Do you know how to commit a perfect murder? Do you know? Do you know? Answer me. Answer me!
Yes. Yes, I do.
What do you intend to do about it? Will you tell Mr. Holmes? Will you tell Wickham or Forrest? The police, perhaps?
Let me be, Edith. I've been under a great strain all these weeks. I've hardly slept. Go back to the hotel. Leave me. I want to walk by myself in this cool air.
Very well, Uncle Edward. But you can't keep this terrible secret to yourself. What do you intend to do about it?
I shall do nothing. For the moment.
Well, our carriage is coming into the Cotswolds, Holmes. Of course, one difficulty remains.
Difficulty, Watson?
There must be some 15 or 20 hotels, camps, and other places where the professor may have taken his niece in these hills. Now, how do we determine which spot that he's chosen for the murder?
There'll be a way, Watson. There'll be a way.
Confound it, Holmes. If you've an idea of how to find this killer, then tell me. This is hardly the time to play cat and mouse.
Calmly, Watson, calmly. There must be a way of learning their whereabouts. If we're not too late to save the girl's life already.
Clark?
Yes, ma'am.
Does this hotel send telegraphic messages for its guests?
Certainly, ma'am.
I should like to send this message immediately. Can you read my handwriting?
To Mr. Sherlock Holmes, 221B Baker Street, London. Uncle Edward has solved the riddle. Urgent you come here. We are in the Cotswold St. George Hotel. Do not lose a second.
That's right. Send it now, would you, and put the charges on my bill.
Yes, Miss Marshall. Thank you.
Clark. Hey. Oh, Clark.
Yes. Oh, Professor Roberts.
I saw my niece here at the desk. Did you do what she wanted?
Yes, I'm sending the telegram for her now.
Telegram? May I see it, please?
Here it is, Professor.
Oh, it isn't necessary to send that. Just tear it up.
Oh, but, Professor...
I said tear it up.
Anything you say, sir.
Stop here, driver.
Well, this is the Cotswold District, Holmes. Now where to?
I shall make an inquiry at this first hotel, Watson.
What sort of inquiry?
I shall ask which hotel in this area is equipped with health bath facilities.
What on earth?
You remember when we first visited the cottage at Bald Head? Edith said their luggage was ready and standing by the door.
Yes, quite. I saw it.
My dear Watson, you saw, but you did not think. You should have noticed that the professor's luggage was covered with labels from hotels he'd been to previously.
I saw the labels, too.
As you and I have been riding, I've run quickly through the labels I'd seen. I realized instantly that every hotel the professor had visited in the past was equipped with health bath facilities, obviously a preference of his. The remainder of our problem is negligible. We shall dash into this hotel and ask which spot in these hills has a Turkish bath and similar equipment. Wait for us, coachman. Don't leave your post.
The ice for your head, Uncle Edward. Feeling better?
Oh, yes, yes, Edith. Much better. So kind of you to bring it to my room.
I've wrapped it in this towel I found in your bathroom. There you are.
Oh, it feels good. Splitting headache.
You must take a nap. I'll leave you.
I don't think you can leave, Edith.
Why not?
I've locked the door.
What?
I've locked the door.
Why did you do that?
I didn't want you to go.
Uncle Edward... Don't get up. Stay in that sofa. You're not well.
There isn't a thing wrong with me.
But you asked me to bring the ice. You said a headache.
A very cheap deception, Edith, but practical enough. I locked the door to be sure you wouldn't run off. You see, I've not only worked out how to commit the perfect murder, but I cannot resist the temptation to see if my theory is correct.
still playing a game with me.
No, no, not at all. Try the door, Edith. It is locked, isn't it?
You've gone mad.
I fought this temptation, Edith. I did not want to know the answer to the problem. I was afraid I'd want to try it once I knew. And then... I solved it. I'm convinced. The chances of anyone's learning the cause of your death...
My death?
Yes, yes, dear. The chances of their learning the cause of your death or of ever accusing me of it are non-existent. There is a way to kill you that fulfills those seemingly impossible requirements.
Let me out! Let me out
Don't
of here!
Don't scream, Edith. Perhaps you didn't notice I selected a room in an abandoned section of this huge hotel in a distant tower.
You couldn't do it! You couldn't!
I thought that myself. But can you appreciate what an achievement this will be for me? Can you understand how I had to know the answer? And now that I do, how I must confirm it?
They'll find me here in your room.
Oh, will they?
Sherlock Holmes knows I went off with you.
It's a long way from there to proving I did away with you. You forget. This is the ideal murder, Edith. The steps I shall take after you are dead.
I know. The window. I'll get out that
you
way.
You can't open it. I tend to that. You'll also notice that before you came, I cleared the room. Nothing is available for you to use as a weapon against me. So you're going to die, Edith, within the next few seconds.
No! No!
But before you die, you will have the privilege of seeing a technique in murder never before used in the history of man. I shall start now. The simplicity of it will astound you. All I must do is...
You'll do nothing, Professor Roberts.
Oh.
I brought the law with me. Seize him up, sir.
Come on, Professor.
He was going to
go
kill
on,
me.
Officer.
Don't try any tricks, Professor.
No, no, you'll never know.
The Professor will fall through the window.
Now, Holmes, now that we've returned to Baker Street, I say we should enjoy a well-deserved rest, eh? Oh, now who could that be?
Come in.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Yes?
My name's Briggs. I'm counselor for the estate of Professor Roberts. Buried him this morning, you know.
What brings you to Baker Street, Mr. Briggs? Oh, I'm sorry, this is Dr. Watson.
Oh, no. I've no business with him, just with you. We've found this envelope here in a steel box for the late professor. It says no one is to open it but you. So go on, open it, let's be done with it.
Very well. As soon as I remove this sealing wax. Aha.
What's it say, Holmes? What's it say, Holmes?
Watson. Professor Roberts writes that he bequeathed his technique for committing the absolutely perfect murder to me. He wrote this to be read by me should he die before I did. He wishes to be remembered by posterity as the creator of this technique, the first in all recorded time to discover it. He describes how to commit the perfect murder. Just three sentences, the most surprising three sentences I've ever read. And he's right. He's 100% right.
What are they, Holmes? What does the paper say?
Nothing, Watson.
Nothing. Careful, Mr. Holmes. You hold that paper too close to the fireplace and you'll burn it.
Exactly what I intend to do, Mr. Briggs. They are.
Oh, but Mr. Holmes, you burned it. We'll never know what the paper says. Oh, Holmes. How do you commit the perfect murder?
That, my dear Watson, is something I must try desperately to forget. And something about which the world must forever wonder.
Well, Dr. Watson, and did Mr. Holmes ever reveal that secret?
No, Mr. Harris. Never.
Oh. Well, you've a revelation you must make, though, Doctor.
Do I, Mr. Hatteras?
You must tell us a bit about the adventure you've planned for next week.
Well, next week, Mr. Hatteras, I shall relate to you the adventure of the ancient queen. It involves a crooked knife, a statue's fist, and a certain society. And I'm quite sure you'll enjoy it.
makers of Clippercraft clothes and more than 1,200 stores from coast to coast, have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and the program is produced and directed by Basil Lochran. Sherlock Holmes is played by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by George Felton. This week's story was written by Howard Merrill, with special music by Albert Berman. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Be sure to listen next week to Sherlock Holmes in The Adventure of the Ancient Queen. This is Cy Harris speaking for Clippercraft Clothes. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Welcome back. Well, this I like this episode. It wasn't typical of Sherlock Holmes, certainly. But it was a good kind of suspenseful episode. You know, wondering, you know, will they get there or not? Now, obviously, if you're kind of expectant about the plot, like, you know, if everything will go the same, well, of course they'll get there. But they definitely, outside of that of our expectation that, of course, Holmes will get there, kept the suspense pretty high. There were a couple of points in here, of course, where you kind of, wonder, there was one dumb moment, I think, you know, when they basically, they decided to go ahead and to let them go on vacation and that, you know, they ride a few miles off and then Holmes, realizes something's, going on. And the only reason I can think they could have left was his, say-so. But that was kind of the main, flaw that, bothered me. Though you had everybody acting kind of like, oh, but you lost it! No! Now nobody's going to be able to, commit the perfect murder. Of course, even if something like that could be worked out, it would also depend, it would have to depend on a lot of other circumstances. And while the logic professor's logic may have been impeccable, for him based on what he understood, you have enough other people around, criminologists, police, somebody's gonna eventually find, one flaw that you happen to miss. Alright, well, we turn to a listener comments, Tim writes in regarding the fabulous windmill. I listened to Sherlock Holmes' The Fabulous Windmill this morning on my way to work and quickly decided that it was the lamest Sherlock Holmes episode to date. The listener encounters plot hole after plot hole. You pointed out several. My favorite, the greatest human mind other than Holmes, Professor Moriarty, didn't notice that Holmes had started the windmill running for no apparent purpose. Really? And the episode was so full of soliloquy and dialogue that didn't advance the plot that I suspect that it was originally a 15-minute radio play, and they just padded out to make half an hour. If it wasn't that, I always look forward to your commentary after the show. I might have turned off after Holmes and Watson, after Holmes told Watson there was a diabolical villain in the windmill and that they should go on. I hope we don't get anything this bad again. And while I'm ranting, what's with those teasers at the top of the show? They do absolutely nothing to pique my interest in listening further. Why change a format that worked? Well, I guess it answered a couple of things. I guess the only thing I can say in defense of the writers is that Holmes may be the toughest detective show to write for in radio, just because there's so much expectation and there's so much that listeners have already established about him. Now that doesn't really excuse everything, but it does explain, I think, part of the problem that was run into. Another thing that may also be a bit of a factor I think that we've kind of run into since the show switched from Tom Conway to John Stanley. And that big difference, of course, is the Conway and Rathbone Bruce series were recorded in Hollywood. And, you know, so they had access to some of the finer Hollywood writers. It appears that, you know, for this New York run, we just have not gotten that same capability and talent. And, you know, I'll be honest, the John Stanley run is one I debated over, you know, whether we were going to run it or not. Because there were some episodes that were clunkers. I ended up going ahead with it because I thought there were some episodes that were pretty interesting. And, you know, there are some series where I do put a dividing line where I'm like, okay, this particular era we'll listen to and the others not. One is Philo Vance and the other is Mr. and Mrs. North. There's some later episodes that are just not that good at all. And this one, I just did not do that. You know, I think there's certain folks for whom Sherlock Holmes is always, you know, going to be the top. And, you know, they're willing to put up with some episodes that are lesser qualities. And there are some good ones here. And I think, you know, to John Stanley's credit, they do very well when they actually just go ahead and adapt a story. And there are several of those ahead. And also ahead of us, we have a three-part story arc, which is, you know, very rare in radio. I have not listened to all the episodes here, but I can assure you there'll be a few more clunkers, and there'll also be some episodes I think that are worth listening to. And overall, I hope it averages out for you and all of our listeners. Tim concludes by saying, as I've said before, you do a fabulous job with those podcasts. Keep up the great work. Well, thanks a lot, Tim. All right, well, that will do it for today. We will be back tomorrow with yours truly, Johnny Dollar. And then join us back here again on Thursday for another episode of Sherlock Holmes. In the meantime, send your comments to Box13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.